Daddy, are we rich? It's the kind of question that makes every parent freeze. You can feel your heartbeat quicken as you search for the right words. Too much information might sound like bragging. Too little might seem evasive. And lurking behind that innocent inquiry is something deeper, a child trying to understand their place in the world. This uncomfortable moment is exactly where real parenting begins. Money isn't just about dollars and cents. It's a lens through which children learn about fairness, hard work, generosity, and gratitude. In an age where college costs six figures, social media fuels constant comparison, and economic inequality shapes daily life, our silence about finances does more harm than good. When we treat money like a shameful secret, children don't stop wondering about it. They just fill the void with playground rumors and internet searches. Today's children face a financial landscape their grandparents couldn't imagine. They scroll through Instagram seeing curated lives of abundance. They'll graduate into a world where pensions are extinct and healthcare is a personal responsibility. Yet most families maintain an odd code of silence around finances, as if discussing money will somehow corrupt innocent minds. This fear backfires spectacularly. When teenager Jacob Swindell Secor addressed a room of educators, he asked a piercing question. How can we be the future if you're not going to teach us about money, which is our future? He's right. Avoiding financial conversations doesn't protect children. It leaves them vulnerable and unprotected. Consider what parents fear most, raising a spoiled child. It's the descriptor that haunts us more than mean or even cruel, because being spoiled reflects directly on our parenting choices. Spoiled children share predictable traits: few responsibilities, minimal rules, excessive parental assistance, and abundant possessions. But here's the revelation. Every characteristic of an unspoiled child, patience, generosity, perseverance, curiosity, can be taught using money as the vehicle. The allowance system teaches delayed gratification. Charitable giving teaches compassion. Work teaches grit. Rather than corrupting values, money conversations become the training ground where character develops.
Children are relentless investigators. 13-year-old Caden sacrificed video game time to research his father's salary online. Kids will Google, eavesdrop, and interrogate friends to solve family finance mysteries. When parents reflexively lie, "We can't afford it," children eventually recognize these fibs, learning money is off limits for honest discussion. They turn to confused peers or random internet sources instead. One response works universally. "What do you ask?" This buys thinking time while opening conversation. The tone matters: curious and encouraging, not suspicious. Most money questions fall into two categories: peer comparisons based on playground exaggerations, or fear-based concerns. Understanding the motivation addresses the real issue. When your child asks, "Are we rich?" probe why they're asking. Usually, it's about comparing with friends. Then broaden wealth's definition beyond material things to include health, relationships, and community. The pattern is consistent. Honesty, delivered with age-appropriate context, builds trust and understanding that lasts a lifetime.
The most powerful lesson money can teach is waiting, a skill rapidly disappearing in our on-demand culture. A landmark study tracking 1,000 people from birth to age 32 revealed that childhood self-control predicted adult financial stability better than social class or IQ. Children with poor impulse control grew into adults struggling with debt and less likely to own homes. The three-jar system provides a tangible framework: spend for immediate desires, give for charitable donations, and save for longer-term goals. Start with equal distribution or simple ratios, like $2, $2, $4 for younger children, then let them decide their own allocation as they mature. Some families add incentives: generous interest rates that decrease as balances grow, or matching contributions. For children between 8 and 13, physical cash in jars teaches more powerfully than abstract bank balances. This system naturally introduces the distinction between wants and needs. When children watch their save jar grow slowly toward a desired toy, they experience delayed gratification,
a feeling that served them through every major financial decision of their lives. Clothing battles plague many families. Create a visual want-need continuum. Draw a horizontal line with basic options on the need end and expensive brands on the want end. Then draw a vertical line in the sand showing what you'll pay for. If your standard is mid-priced clothing, children who want pricier items must pay the difference from their own money. For older children, consider giving them control of their entire clothing budget. Financial planner Cheryl Holland tried this with her high school daughter, who initially made mistakes but quickly became a savvy shopper who watched for sales, ultimately saving her parents' money. Some families give larger allowances but make children responsible for all discretionary purchases. One father requires his children to write essays defending expensive requests. For items like laptops, he calculates the cost of a basic model, then advances money for upgrades, deducting it from future allowances. Consider smartphones. Basic cell phones for communication are needs in modern life, but smartphones are wants. Children should pay for smartphones and data charges. Mary Kay Russell's four sons can have any smartphone they want once they save enough to buy it, plus write a $360 check covering the first year's data. Her oldest waited until age 21. For cars, first determine if the vehicle serves the child's wants or the parent's needs. If parents need the teen to drive younger siblings, they should pay. If it's merely a want, the teen should contribute. One family treated their second car like a rental, charging their son insurance fees plus hourly usage rates, teaching real-world costs while discouraging unnecessary driving. Mary Matheson created a brilliant metric, hours of fun per dollar. Her son's cash register delivered 185.5 hours per dollar, while an expensive talking toy yielded just 0.08. Her children internalized this, justifying video games, thousands of hours for $60, and choosing library books over buying them. Practical tools reinforce wise spending. One family made coupon clipping a weekly ritual with cash prizes. Prepaid debit cards work brilliantly for special events. One mother gave each child $100 for Disney World extras, forcing trade-offs while building empowerment. When a military family prioritized debt repayment, their daughter took pride in finding unique $1 thrift store t-shirts. Grandma Dana gave grandchildren $1 per year of age for birthday dollar store trips, revealing distinct shopping styles. With social media normalizing excessive consumption through haul videos, parents must create counter-programming. One mother turns commercials into a game, racing her daughter to identify subliminal marketing. She emphasizes community sharing, borrowing ski equipment, receiving apples from neighbors, teaching her daughter to first turn to the community when needs arise. Parents must actively explain charitable giving, not just model it. Research shows most children are unaware of their parents' charitable activities. Yet children are naturally generous. 20-month-olds showed greater happiness giving treats to puppets than receiving them, especially when giving their own treats. Conversations about giving often arise unexpectedly. When a 4-year-old spotted a homeless man with newspapers in his shoes, she asked, "Can we take him home?" Such moments reveal children's natural empathy and create opportunities to discuss complex social issues. The most effective approach involves children in donation decisions. One family used 100 dried beans to represent their annual giving budget, placing beans beside charity labels. Their 8-year-old evaluated solicitation mail, rejecting a public art fund because statues weren't true needs, while supporting camp scholarships. When Hannah Salwin questioned her family's giving after seeing a homeless man beside a Mercedes, she suggested selling their 6,500-square-foot house and donating half the proceeds. Her parents agreed. The family downsized and donated nearly $1 million to build community centers in Ghana, a decision born from one honest conversation about privilege and responsibility. Though teenage employment dropped from 45% in 1998 to 20% by 2013, research shows part-time work under 15 hours weekly correlates with good grades and high college expectations. Work experience builds grit, the perseverance and passion for long-term goals that predicts success better than IQ. Start children with age-appropriate responsibility. Montessori chore charts suggest 2-year-olds can carry firewood, 6-year-olds empty dishwashers, 12-year-olds grocery shop. On one Utah dairy farm, 7 sons ages 6 to 19 work daily, managing all expenses after a 10% tithe starting in 6th grade. Children notice socioeconomic differences early. 3-year-olds understand rich and poor, 6-year-olds track possessions, 11-year-olds connect class to ambition. Feeling fortunate benefits kids. Gratitude correlates with higher grades, life satisfaction, and social integration. Establish grace-saying rituals before meals. Create cross-class friendships through team sports or community activities. Help children define enough based on values rather than comparisons. Narrate financial decisions, explaining trade-offs, why we moved for opportunities, or set activity limits. This prepares children for lives of purpose and genuine contentment.